Hi, thanks so much for staying with Sharad and I on Consider This. Let's continue our discussion about the pressing need to restore the ecological functions of a forest area that has become degraded through deforestation. Dr. Zaiman Zulkifli joins us now. He's the Executive Director of the Tropical Rainforest Conservation and Research Centre, which aims to restore Malaysia's tropical rainforests and address the critical rate of biodiversity loss. Zaiman, thank you so much for joining us today. Now, I understand that Tropical Rainforest Conservation Research, TRCRC, has projects both in East Malaysia and West Malaysia. The idea is to restore and protect rainforest living collections. And I'm just wondering if you could begin by explaining a little bit what living collections are and why it's so important to conserve them.
All right. Thank you very much for having me. So living collections are essentially collections of living plants and nurseries that we have dotted around Malaysia. And the primary reason why we set up living collections is for to have a planting stock or seedling stocks to restore our degraded lands. What we actually have in Malaysia is what we call unorthodox kind of seed behavior. And so what happens is our seeds do not go into a dormancy period. So when they germinate and after flowering and they fall on the ground, they actually pollinate instantly and sit on the ground waiting for the forest clearing to open up and then grow up into a tree. Orthodox species in the more temperate climates, what they do is they actually have a dormancy period, and so you are able to then prolong this dormancy, seed dormancy of a particular species or a particular plant, and have a storage within kind of vaults or refrigerated storage, and that basically can extend its shelf life of a seed. But in Malaysia, because of the water content, because of our biology, they actually fruit and flower and then germinate almost instantly within 2 to 14 days for some species. So what we need to then carry out is actually a range of nurseries and a range of collections that grow these trees in constant, so that we have a constant supply of restoration material. And that's why we call them living.
Yeah, it's very interesting. Many Malaysians don't even know that we are a very biodiverse country, not just in the peninsula, but also in Sabah and Sarawak. And also, when I think we hear of the loss of biodiversity, often it's the megafauna that gets the top billing. You know, we rarely think about plants, especially when plants go extinct. I wonder if you can help us understand that dimension of things. I mean, how much are we losing, not just in terms of land area when it comes to forest and, you know, and the loss of biodiversity, but the actual species that we have lost over time and what can be done to save those or restore those?
Yeah. So when it comes to plants, it's often the last thing people look at. They think that if a tree or a population of plants exists within a certain forest, those trees are safeguarded, right? But what you actually do not notice is actually these trees reproduce the same way. They reproduce sexually, like animals kind of do. They need to pollinate one another. And from having a lack of mates between different trees, your success rates of germinating and your success rates of establishing yourself on the ground is very quickly diminished. What we have in our forest right here is a certain sort of flowering that happens in mass, triggered by the El Nino event, which is happening actually this year. So what you see is the whole forest fruit and flower at the same time. And when that happens, all the seeds kind of like have the chance, I mean, all the plants have the chance to cross-pollinate each other. It's our cue for the trees to fruit and flower at the same time. And so that increases its pollination, its germination, and all that stuff. And so when that happens, all the seeds fall on the forest floor, increasing its chance to happen and germinate and become a young seedling, which then can grow into a tree. But when you fragment the forest, or when you diminish and break down these processes, what happens is actually these trees are not establishing themselves. They actually are overpredated all the way. First of all, they might not even pollinate because their pollinators might not be there. They might also then also have a high chance of getting eaten up by pests, for example, because you are fruiting and in isolation. So all the pests are then targeting that one tree. And then later on, when it falls on the floor, it's in isolation as well. So you lose the biological kind of system and the way these forests need to work to reproduce. So that is one of the biggest fears that we have. You know.
Simon, I'm just wondering, how would you go about identifying which areas require forest restoration efforts? I'm just thinking, I mean, it's like finding a tree in a forest, literally. How do you look at which areas require the most help to address degradation and perhaps, you know, the critical rate of biodiversity loss?
So a few things we look at is actually basically look at where the degraded areas are. First of all, there's satellite imagery out there. And with LiDAR technology, you can actually look at forest health in terms of structure. You can look at forest health in terms of biodiversity and biomass in terms of how many kind of how many trees are there within a certain area. And they can also pick up degradation by satellite up to like a small 30 by 30 meter square. So we use that and go back into time and up to a certain amount of years, and we can see where the most heaviest degradation is happening. Another thing that we need to prioritize is prioritize the most diverse areas. So certain areas already have been identified, certain forests are identified more highly diverse than others. What you want to do is then protect those and connect those highly diverse vegetated areas. But also think about it as functions for animals. So animals need functioning forests to be able to cut across to migrate from one forest to another forest. So habitat connectivity is important. And we have a great policy in Malaysia to push for this, a great agenda, which is the Central Forest Pine Initiative. And we can first of all try to see how we can meet those targets in restoring some of these degraded connected forests.
Simon, glad you brought up the, you know, policy, because Malaysia doesn't lack good policy, and you know, some of it's excellently designed, replicated in other countries, but execution is always the problem in Malaysia, isn't it? So the Central Forest Pine policy that's been around for some time now has seen more violations of its central philosophy, recently the case in Pahang as well. So how do you balance it up? We have great policies, and do you get support from government to actually do the work that you're doing against the actual practice and the actual decisions made, especially at the state level?
Yeah. So what is actually happening is that the opportunity loss is actually higher than the opportunity to save it. So a state most of the times makes a lot of its revenue through mining and logging and those sort of activities. So what we need to kind of shift is kind of moving and developing alternative revenue for states to safeguard its forests. So in making sure that we have the correct incentives to safeguard forests, be it for ecosystem services such as providing water, safeguarding from flooding events or from landslides, and also the biggest emerging kind of new era is kind of carbon. So how can we develop ways of financing these projects is the key. Because right now, if you have a nice federal initiative, and then you go to the states and tell them this is what you need to do, they most likely will not do it because there's no incentives for them to do it. They actually lose the opportunity to gain revenue from those forests.
So how would you convince them, Zaiman? How would you convince them that this is necessary despite what is seen to be revenue loss, but the importance of regenerating forest biodiversity? I'm just wondering whether those efforts can outpace the deforestation rate that we're seeing at the moment.
Yeah, That's a very tough question, and that's kind of like most of my work that I do these days is actually looking at how to value these forests and gain high value for forests as they stand. So developing initiatives for states to make funds through protection of forests is actually key. So how can you protect forests and develop, you know, high value ecotourism? How could you then develop carbon kind of financing for safeguarding these the carbon that trees protect? How do we then, you know, a lot of forested areas provide clean water. How do we then incentivize the landowners to be to get a share of the, you know, water revenue? Because these are the forests that are providing this clean water for reservoirs and things like this. So we need to be very clever in terms of, you know, positively incentivizing safeguarding forests. And that funds need to go all the way down to the state and all the way down to the people managing it, and so that it makes sense to keep it going. If you develop a, you know, a nice idea and a nice concept, but actually do not know how to execute it, it gets stuck, and it the policy then is unable to be activated. So what you need to do is try to have players on the ground, organizations on the ground, to develop these projects to the next stage.
That was Zaman Zulkifli from Tropical Rainforest Conservation and Research Center, wrapping up this episode of Consider This. But before we leave you tonight, on behalf of the Consider This team, we wish those celebrating a Selamat Hari Raya Aidil Adha. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutin, signing off for the evening.
Thank you so much for watching, and good night.